This is VK6 Amateur Radio News with News West for Sunday the 22nd of November 2020. We don't have a set theme this week, so what we do have for you is an interesting mixed bag of subjects. People's stories, a bit of science, a bit of history, and there's a report on last week's ham feast, and we ask what's happening at the Australian Maritime College, and we look at the inner workings of News West. And unfortunately, we have a silent key notice. News West is the best all amateur radio news that you'll hear any week. You can hear News West on air, online, and on demand. Visit our vk6.net website to find out how.
Ham College is saddened to inform you that our life member, Neil, VK6 BDO, became a silent key on the 18th of November. Neil was a giant in the promotion of our hobby in many fields, but for us it was his development of educational programs for those entering the hobby and for those who wished to progress, with his irrepressible enthusiasm. He was the major force behind our club for many years, and his initiatives were always followed through to conclusion with his dogged persistence, and his presence will be sorely missed. And his wise counsel at the college has left a gap that can't be filled. I know that his family will be following up this announcement with a formal and proper tribute and with the arrangements. But today, let's just say vale and rest in peace. Neil Husk, VK6, Bravo, Delta, Oscar, Silent Key.
In our round of themes for News West, next week we explore the world of new amateurs. What was your experience of being a new amateur? Whether your introduction to amateur radio was last week, last decade, or last century, how about telling us your story? Hearing about your entry into the hobby will prove useful, or at the very least, interesting to newcomers. We've had a few people share their experience with us, so how about you? The usual deal applies. Make your own recording if you can, and send it and your script to newswest@vke6.net. If recording isn't possible, just send us your text, as one of the news team will record it. Or more excitingly, email us, and one of us can arrange a chat on Skype or Zoom, and we can record an interview. And a guarantee that all your ums, ahs, and verbal stums will be edited out. We can do that because we edit all of our own stuff every week. The email address again is newswest@vke6.net.
Hi, this is Dan, VK6NAD. This week's interview is with Neil, VK6BDO, recorded live at Ham College.
What was that? What did you do in the military?
Officially, I was a radio operator. In actual fact, I did a lot of work with small boats, which meant you did visual signals and manoeuvring as well.
Oh, right. So this is like Morse code with lights?
Yep, that and flags, yep.
Semaphore?
That too, yeah. But international flag flags, each flag has a meaning. In fact, several meanings, depending on whether it's flown from a military ship or a civilian ship or whatever.
Right, so this is the identification of vessels type flags?
Yeah, it can be used for call signs and so on. You've probably seen it in the river sometime, a flag blue and white on a boat means divers down. That's an international meaning for flag alpha.
So today, do they still teach semaphore and CW and things like that in the military? Is there any use for it today?
Not CW, not radio-wise at least. They would probably still, I don't know quite honestly, I expect they'd probably still do it by flashing light, and they'd probably still do semaphore. Let's face it, flashing light is probably the most secure form of communications, in that unless you're directly in the path of that light, you can't see it.
So I've been trying to learn CW, and I've got a way to go. And I'm trying to do it by listening to the music of the Morse code. How does that work when you're looking at a light?
Well, it's a lot slower by light than it is by ear. So, yeah, you're more or less looking at the letter by letter and reading it out for someone else to write down.
So how many words per minute would they operate at?
Good question.
question without notice.
Yeah. It's fairly slow. It's probably less than 8 words a minute, I would think, or thereabouts, I would suspect.
That's still pretty quick for the likes of me.
Well, when you're doing it by ear, we used to get trained to 25. The best I ever did was 30 and passed.
That is truly impressive. Thank you very much for that. This is?
This is VK6PDO, Neil.
On HF, VHF and UHF, via the VK6 linked repeater network, and online, this is News West from VK6 ARN.
The Ionosphere. This extract from the Space Weather Service of the Australian Bureau of Meteorology describes the regions of the ionosphere. In a region extending from a height of about 50 kilometres to over 500 kilometres, some of the atoms and molecules are electrically charged, that is, ionised, by radiation from the sun. This region is called the ionosphere. Ionization is the process in which electrically charged and neutral atoms and molecules gain or lose electrons. Of specific interest to high frequency, that is 3 MHz to 30 MHz, radio communications via the ionosphere or sky wave is the process where negatively charged electrons are stripped from atoms and molecules to produce free electrons. While the ionosphere is named after the ions, it is the free electrons which are essential for HF sky wave communications. The variations in density of free electrons in the ionosphere cause HF radio waves to refract or bend, allowing the upper atmosphere to be used as a reflector for communications between distant locations on the ground. The density of free electrons in the ionosphere is not uniform. Regions of higher electron density form at different altitudes. The height at which a particular frequency is refracted depends on the electron density profile, with higher frequencies being refracted from the regions of higher electron density. The region of highest electron density determines the highest frequency capable of being refracted by the ionosphere. In the day ionosphere, there may be four regions present, the D, E, F1 and F2 regions. Their approximate height ranges are D region 50 to 90 kilometres, E region 90 to 140 kilometres, F1 region 140 to 210 kilometres and the F2 region over 210 kilometres. At night, the D, E and F1 regions become depleted of free electrons so as to be insignificant to HF skywave. The F2 electron density also decreases during the course of the night, so that lower frequencies are required for use then. Higher frequencies may actually penetrate the ionosphere. At certain times during the solar cycle, mostly during winter at solar maximum, the daytime F1 and F2 regions merge. During these times and at night, the F2 region is called the F region. Only the E, F1 and F2 regions refract HF waves. The D region, through which any HF sky wave must pass through to reach the refracting region, absorbs the energy of the wave and reduces signal strength. A thin, dense layer of electrons called sporadic E sometimes forms in the E region. Sporadic E can occur at day or night and is capable of refracting HF sky waves. The F2 region is the most important region for HF skywave propagation because, firstly, it is present 24 hours of the day. Secondly, for long communication paths, its high altitude reduces the required number of hops. And thirdly, it usually refracts the highest frequencies in the HF range.
From the studios of News West, we bring you, well, nothing really. If we've led you to believe that we have such a thing as a News West studio, we've led you down the garden path. So if there's not a News West studio per se, what goes on? How is News West put together? The reality is that each team member records their items in the comfort and privacy of their own homes. It almost sounds like something that should arrive in a plain brown paper wrapper, doesn't it? Each of us finds a corner of our house to use as a recording studio. Those of us lucky enough to have a discreet room to use as a radio shack double this room up as a recording studio. Although we work separately in making the recordings, we collaborate in terms of collecting information and writing the scripts. We use a cloud-based collaboration suite which enables us to share and track documents and recordings. The producer checks each recording, adjusts audio levels and removes any glitches such as long pauses, hiccups, etc. before assembling all the pieces into one recording. Sophisticated recording equipment isn't necessary, and acceptable results can be obtained, if necessary, by using a smartphone. Some contributors, and I started out this way myself, use Electret microphones, the type found in cheap headsets, and although these mics can sound a bit thin and can introduce some unwanted artifacts into the audio, they can do a reasonable job. I found after some time that by the simple act of introducing an audio mixer into my equipment, the audio quality improved and a further leap in audio quality was achieved by getting a decent microphone. And getting a good mic doesn't have to cost an arm and a leg. Around $50 on eBay can get a mic producing a good result. The small, single mic mixer cost me about $60 second hand. So anyway, back to production. Once the complete audio file has been produced, it's uploaded to a server to make it available for download, and it also goes to podcast. Every week, NewsWest is promoted on social media, including email, Facebook, and QRZ.com, with good results. For instance, the post on QRZ last weekend had been read 143 times by midweek. So anyway, that's how we put NewsWest together. Team members usually start recording their items around Thursday, and the finished product is finished and published by Saturday lunchtime.
The Gail Potter Story. A few days ago, I chucked a few metres of wire to listen to my trusty little Digitech receiver, mainly to see what was going on with the airband, as I used to be a recreational pilot and aircraft owner. The shortwave bands are, of course, totally dominated by Asian stations, nothing in English. I do like to have a bit of wire up in the air, as it makes me feel connected. My first wires were put up in the early 1940s, as I experimented with crystal set designs. Around 1950, I was in the radio industry with Radio Corporation in South Melbourne. I gained a radio technician certificate with the Marconi School of Wireless in 1950, still have it, and later in the RAAF Radcom School of Radio Communications in late 1950. Passed the exam with a Morse speed of 23 words per minute. Anyway, that was the end of my radio interest for decades, as I was living abroad until 1971, and on my return, pursuing my career as a registered nurse. Somewhere around 1980, I became interested in CB radio, and then ham radio. I had four or five ham radio friends, all long since silent keys, and would go on air with VK6CN, Cyril, who lived nearby. I did a ham course at a technical school, which no longer exists, somewhere near Hillary's, I think. But nursing and family commitments were more important. Also, I preferred flying. Anyway, a ham gave me a brand new Yaesu FT-101ZD. Still in the unopened box. Well, that was around 1987. Then I brought a Yaesu FT-575, I think. So I became active on 27.555 freeband and logged 90 countries in 1 year and eventually exceeded 100. I was keen on experimenting with antenna design and was considered somewhat knowledgeable on the subject. Just between us, many on freeband were also full-call hams, and I know that for a fact. Twice I applied to be examined at my home about 15 years ago, as I could not attend the school being too far away. For the foundation license, and twice an appointment was made, but on both occasions the examiner failed to appear. So that was that. No more radio. Today I was astonished to hear the National and VK6 news bulletins. I thought ham radio was dead and gone forever, then turned into some JA's calling CQ contest. I could not pass any exam now, as I have never understood solid state or digital technology. I could still draw a basic vacuum tube power supply or superhet receiver.
So, I am in my 88th year now, and just wanted to share the above with someone out there in Radioland. P.S. Still a blokey hobby, it seems. Oh, I was a member of ALARA and went to their lunches at the Bayswater Hotel. I wonder if Poppy is still around. 73 and 33 to any YLs. Gail Potter.
After gaining my probationary wings as an F-call 2 years ago, I decided it was time to sit for the standard upgrade. So this is how I went about it. I downloaded the RES online course and began feverishly studying the 30 tutorials. Unfortunately, I only had 8 days to study due to work and life commitments, and not the 6 to 8 weeks recommended for the course. On the Saturday morning 3 weeks ago, I arrived at the Ham College to sit for the examination and was greeted by some very friendly faces, which put my mind at ease. Sitting the exam brought back a lot of memories and a lot of old stuff that I'd learned as a youngster. And there was even some trick questions in there, which I think I might have jagged. Whilst on the subject of Ham College, I'd like to say a big thank you to Andrew and the team who do an outstanding job as a voluntary service. I actually enjoyed sitting the examination and thoroughly enjoyed the time in the company of other amateurs. The one downside for the day, if there was one, was the fact that before I left the college, I was not made aware of the outcome of the examination. Apparently, since the AMC has taken over, it must now be secret men's business to know if you've passed or failed. Andrew explained, post the examination, that the AMC had full control over marking the examination papers, and a big thank you again to Andrew. This was a major disappointment for myself and others who were sitting their upgrades on the same day. We are in the 21st century, and it staggers me how we cannot even know the result before we leave the premises. One issue that we discussed, post the examination, was do we continue to study, not knowing if we've passed or failed, or do we not continue to study and just hope that we passed? Surely there's got to be a better way with today's technology. Speaking of the AMC, once the AECMA announced that they were changing the call sign regulations, I applied to the AMC for a change of call. That was at the start of August. It was only last week, 3.5 months later, that I received a phone call. I diligently advised the operator that I just recently sat 3 weeks ago for the standard upgrade, and this was going to cause confusion with the change of call. The operator on the other end of the phone advised that they hadn't even received the paperwork for the examination, but they would marry up the changing call to the examination paper and be in contact. I can honestly say I'm not hopeful of hearing this side of Christmas, which is a real disappointment. I can only suggest if you're looking to upgrade or change your call sign, that you need to be very patient, as I doubt you're going to get any outcome this side of Christmas. On the positive, again, at least I've tested myself for the upgrade, and I can keep my fingers crossed. And no, I'm not continuing to study. We're coming into the festive season, and I have family commitments. So, I can only suggest the AMS does better. In summary, the whole experience of sitting the tutorials and then the examination was a real highlight of my amateur radio so far. The one downside is it's now been 3 weeks since I sat the examination and I'm still none the wiser.
I've done a lot of these. They should be there. You're listening to Amateur Radio News, VK6ARN. This is Neil, VK6Radio.
Today's story on the ionosphere was taken from the Australian Bureau of Meteorology's Space Weather website. You didn't know that the Bureau of Meteorology had a Space Weather website, did you? Me either, but I stumbled across it whilst I was looking for something else. There's a wealth of very useful information there, and there's something there for every amateur to learn, or for those who know everything, you can do some revision. The Space Weather Service delivers on technical level explanations and tops it up with a page or two of explanations specifically for education. And of course, there's current data displayed. It's well worth a look and bookmarking. So where do we find it? sws.bom.gov.au. sws.bom.gov.au. That's easy, eh? Now, I'm hearing reports of some interesting DX turning up lately. Things like 10 metres into Europe, 40 metres into Europe, 20 metres into Europe, and into other places as well. I'm pretty sure I heard someone talking about Africa last week. So the message is, get out there in the shack and have a play around. You'll never, never know. Now, from the feedback facility on the VK6.net website, where we ask people to register their callbacks if they don't listen on air, one from Nick, VK6NDX. And Nick says, I, for one, really appreciate the effort that goes into the broadcast each week. My work in the warmer months, August to April, sees me away from home on a regular basis on fire and burning duties, both on the ground and in the air. To be able to download the podcast is a great way to keep abreast of what's going on. And your combined dedication to making it happen each week is valued by many who do not have the luxury of sitting in a nice, safe, air-conditioned shack doing their hobby such as they would like to. Thanks to you all. Thank you very much, Nick, for that feedback. We really appreciate it.
This from Gabriel Lee and Flight Radar 24. When it comes to time zones, if you're still talking about Greenwich Mean Time, there's something you should know. It's old news. Okay, that's not perfectly correct. In the winter time, as it is now in the UK, the current time in London and everywhere else on that time zone is still referred to as GMT. But Coordinated Universal Time, or UTC, is the modern version. It is the central point of reference for time in all things aviation and in our hobby. Many of us refer to it as Zulu, which we can probably all admit sounds a lot cooler. So what is this Zulu time? Is it always the same time? Why does it exist? And how did it come to be? And why is Greenwich the center of the world, at least when it comes to time zones? As with so many things, UTC has plenty of history behind it, as well as being a very useful concept for reducing confusion when operating across several time zones. So let's delve into the terms a little. But first, we need to look at the acronym UTC. You may have noticed that the letters UTC are out of order. Coordinated Universal Time should equal CUT. Perhaps that stands for the French then? A clever guess. The UN, which administers this sort of standardization, does still consider French its official language. But UTC, en français, is Temps Universel Coordonné, or TUC. So what's with the UTC? It turns out it represents a compromise between the two. How very multilateral. It also looks and reads better than CUT or TUC. So what's so special about Greenwich? It may not be called Greenwich Mean Time anymore, and in fact, even GMT is sometimes changed to General Mean Time to make it less tied to one city. However, this is where all originated, and UTC and Zulu both refer to this exact time. The origin of GMT dates back to Britain's development as a seafaring nation and a great maritime power. They figured out that by carrying a chronometer set to GMT, which was considered to be 0 degrees longitude, ships would be able to calculate their own longitude based on the time where they were. That's a fairly complicated science that deserves its own article, but suffice to say it made GMT a central reference point for ocean-going vessels worldwide, and that also meant that GMT as a kind of standard time took hold throughout the world as well. However, GMT is not precise enough to be used in modern technical pursuits. That's partly because the Earth's rotation can vary slightly, and GMT doesn't account for that variation. So to solve that problem, a commission at the UN got together and in the 1960s adopted UTC as its more precise successor. And so, what is UTC exactly? UTC is essentially based upon the timing of solar noon at 0 degrees longitude, the so-called prime meridian, similar to GMT. However, in the case of UTC, the time is fine-tuned based upon a much more accurate atomic clock. It's not perfect, however. As the Earth's rotation slows ever so slightly, leap seconds need to be added here and there. That's in order to keep the time within the close range of what is known as UT1, a variant of universal time based upon the true solar time. That solar time is constant, but the Earth's rotation is imperfect, hence the need for the leap seconds. There are moves to head to an even better standard that would eliminate the need for adding leap seconds, but no decision has been reached on that yet. How you can sound like an aviator, even though you're a ham. Zulu and UTC are interchangeable. Zulu comes from the US military, which assigns global time zones with letter codes. The UTC time zone carries the letter Z, which in the phonetic alphabet is expressed as Zulu. And saying Zulu will make you sound more like a fighter pilot. Simple as that. What about no daylight savings? Even as local time at 0 degrees longitude may change because of daylight savings, that's when clocks spring ahead and the time in Sydney or Melbourne becomes EDST, or Eastern Daylight Saving Time, UTC does not change. That's helpful for coordination of things across time zones, even though it can cause confusion for those who are operating on civil time. So, for example, If someone says they want a QSO at 1500 hours Zulu in the Northern Hemisphere summertime, that would actually be 1600 hours or 4 p.m. in London. In the same fashion, that would be 11 a.m. in New York during their summer. But in their winter, it would be 10 a.m. A quick rule of thumb to remember is that in the winter time, Zulu is equal to civil time. In the summertime, in locations that observe daylight savings, there is an offset to consider. Clear as day, right? As expected, it's often only pilots, members of the military, and hams who will refer to an event in Zulu time, and usually not when speaking to other mere mortals. It's a good thing public-facing organizations' communications are invariably expressed in civil time instead. Of course, all of this doesn't mean all time-related confusion is avoided, but at least you now know a bit more about Zulu, with thanks to Gabriel Lee of Flight Radar 24.
This from Bob VK6LD. The Manjimup Ham Feast was held at the Quinanup Tavern last Monday, the 16th of November. After missing out on the Katanning Ham Feast in April due to the COVID-19 restrictions, a gathering of 45 to 50 amateurs and partners attended for a day of conversation, food and drinks. People came from as far and wide as Perth Metro, Perth Hills, Esperance, Mount Barker, Katanning and all points in between. The weather was fantastic, and the setting at Quinanup is just magic among the tall carry trees. Steve VK6SJ from DX Radio Systems had his Flex 6700 remote station operating from the lounge bar, demonstrating the capabilities of this very modern equipment. The Hamfest raffle was also very popular, fundraising for Southern Electronics Group, and prizes went to the following. VK6ZGN Bob won the first prize, which is a Comet dual band VHF UHF collinear antenna, which is donated by DX Radio Systems. VK6KRC Bob won the Bushcom 40-metre dipole. VK6IQ Glenn won the Biofing 2-metre 70-centimetre handheld, and that was donated by Duncan, VK6GHZ. Tony XYL of Kim, VK6TQ, won the Bushcom 4-1 Ballon. VK6JDM Donald won the cable tie pack. VK6JX John won the portable frequency counter. VK6XZ Bruce won the VK6 amateur radio guide donated by Wes, VK6WX, and VK6TY Lee won the electronic component cleaning spray, and VK6GX Phil won the roll of self-amalgamating tape. Well, that's a heck of an array of prizes there. The conversations continued in the car park well into the afternoon, exchanging stories, equipment, and ideas. Many thanks to everyone who attended and made the day a success. Thank you also to the sponsors and supporters of the Ham Feast raffle. The next Ham Feast is scheduled for April next year in Katanning, and Rob said he'll post further details closer to the time. Now, if you'd like to be on the Ham Feast mailing list, send Rob an email, and his email address is vk6ld@seg.org.au, and then he'll add your name to the mailing list. Thanks, Rob, for that Ham Feast wrap.
Good morning and greetings from the Helpline Desk, the Amateur Radio Helpline for the 22nd of November 2020. What do I have for you today? I'm looking for the following for Richard. He's looking for an elevation rotator with or without controller for satellite tracking and EME work. If you can help Richard with an elevation antenna elevation rotator, please contact him on his email address, which is victorkilo6foxtrotromeo@iinet.net.au. That's victorkilo6foxtrotromeo@iinet.net.au for an elevation rotator. And also looking for a Jones plug for VK3 Victor Foxtrot Lima. Looking for a Jones plug, a 6-pin male Jones plug is sought. If you can help with Jeff, VK3 Victor Foxtrot Lima, please contact him on his email address, victorkilo3vfl@gmail.com. VK3 Victor Foxtrot Lima at gmail.com. And John, VK6 Juliet Foxtrot, is still looking for your help, please. Looking for a Philips TCA 1676 transceiver handbook. It's a hybrid VHF AM transceiver. Looks like an FM 1677, but it's not. It needs it for a restoration project for the WA Police Historic Museum. Running out of breath. And if you can help John, VK6 Juliet Foxtrot, please contact him on his email address, which is victorkilo6juliet foxtrot at wia.org.au. VK6 Juliet Foxtrot at whiskeyindiaalpha.org.au. That's all I have for you for today. This is VK6 X-Ray Victor wishing you all 7-3. Have a pleasant weekend, and I'll catch you again in the fullness of time, maybe next week.
Thanks to everyone involved in News West this week, the broadcasters, the callback takers, and the production team. This week was Roy VK6XV, Jeff VK6FJLM, Dan VK6NAD, Mike VK6KMS, and guest contributors Andrew VK6AS, Rob VK6LD, and Gail. I'm Bob VK6POP, and for my sins, I'm the News West producer. And my job's available. Make your offer now. Please remember to drag up your memories of becoming a new amateur, be it last week or last century, for inclusion in next week's New Amateurs edition of News West. I'm sure there's many a tale to be told. Send your story idea, or recording to newswest@vk6.net. If you're listening on air, please hang around for callbacks. Then keep the radio running and get on air and make some noise.